What's up, party people? Podcasting from the land of the rising sun, this is Dark Cloud Podcast, here to let you know that every dark cloud has a silver lining. And I'm your host, DL Hayes. Welcome to episode 7, entitled Gentrification Hurts. In today's episode, I am going to be giving my personal account on gentrification, my perspective, implications on the African American / Black community, and potential solutions. I am not necessarily excited or enthused to talk about this topic, but I am anxious and eager to increase awareness and provide information surrounding gentrification. So I am going to actually start off with the definition defined by Merriam-Webster, which is as follows. Gentrification is a noun defined as the process of repairing and rebuilding homes and businesses in a deteriorating area, such as an urban neighborhood, accompanied by an influx of middle-class or affluent people, and that often results in the displacement of earlier, usually poorer residents. So that's the definition, textbook definition. But when you encounter and are surrounded by it, it can definitely have a different meaning and different implications depending on who you are and where you fall in the socioeconomic class of whatever area you may live in. So if you do not know by now, I am from Camden, South Carolina, and I experienced gentrification on a very small scale because, one, I didn't really pay attention while I was living there. And Camden has a bit of a different dynamic because it's the oldest inland city and it holds true to a lot of its historical past. So while it has been modified and there are a lot of modern aspects about Camden, there's still a rich history from the past, including historical landmarks, mindsets, and how things are operated there. So my experience with gentrification was minimal there because to an extent there was not or isn't much to gentrify because it holds true to so much of its historical past. So my greatest experience with gentrification actually comes from living and residing in Charleston, South Carolina, which as of 2017 was considered the fastest gentrifying city in the United States, according to a realtor.com report. And also, just from different resources, the main two resources that I will be using, like pulling information from in this episode, is from the Post and Courier, which is a paper in Charleston, the Charleston City Paper, SouthCarolinaHomeless.org, and Census.org. So the majority of my information will be coming there. And a lot of things that I gathered from it, it was just very eye-opening to really dive in and see the numbers and to put factual evidence behind what I actually saw and lived through in Charleston. So I lived in Charleston for about 7 years before I moved to Japan, and I got to know a lot of people that live there, that are from there, and my husband's family, my in-laws, my husband himself, they are from Charleston. So I got to witness a lot of things firsthand, the culture, the changes, and just hearing about how the dynamics of the city has changed and what is really a relatively short amount of time, because when you look at total history, 10 years is very minuscule. It's a very short amount of time. Whereas compared to our lifespan, our lifetime, it may seem a little bit longer, but in the grand scheme of things, 10 years is a really short time. So I'm just going to give you some stats and numbers and then talk about the things that I was able to see and connect from looking at these numbers. So since 1990, there's been a drastic, dramatic shift in the population in Charleston from African American working class to middle class white families. And the Census Bureau indicates that the percentage difference in the black population went from 42% to 23% within the past three decades. And this makes the overall potential achieved gentrification of Charleston 62.5%. So that means the population has decreased drastically, one, and just the amount of gentrification that has been achieved in that time frame has changed the demographics. It's changed a lot. And Charleston is one of the most toured places on the East Coast. So all of those things factor into the definition one of gentrification and the implications that it has on the black community. So I hope all of this is making sense. And yes, you're going to hear my paper flip in this episode. I can't even help it. I wrote down so many things that I'm making notes on and making reference to. So to really understand the impact of it, I pulled a few examples, and those examples include, one, a panhandling ordinance, two, an ordinance that was placed on the making of and selling of palmetto roses, and then three, the third example is going to be a change in buying out businesses around the area. So the panhandler ordinance, and I'm going to take my time on this, it was passed or updated April 10th, 2018. And essentially, it claims to have been created because it was a safety hazard on the narrow road. So if you know anything about Charleston, the roads, historical, true to form, especially downtown, and they're really narrow. And the claim was that it was a safety hazard. And so they didn't want any lying nor sitting on King Street and Market Street between the hours of 8 a.m. and 2 a.m. in the morning. So to dive a little bit deeper, you have to understand who is being targeted with gentrification and who is being impacted the most. Panhandlers are typically homeless people, and 49.6% actually of the homeless people, according to the Lowcountry Homeless Coalition, which governs homeless people, provide services to them, and we're talking about the Charleston metropolitan area, which comprises of Charleston County and many other surrounding counties, but 49.6% of the homeless in that area are black, which definitely outweighs the total population of black people in that area, because the total population is only 26.9% of that region. So for 49.6% to be black, that is, I don't know what those numbers are doing for you, but it broke my heart, because you can definitely tell who these laws are legally disenfranchising, and it's the black community. So to dive a little bit deeper, Charleston County is the third highest number of unsheltered individuals as of 2017, according to SouthCarolinaHomeless.org. And this is what gentrification is doing. It's creating laws, ordinances, just different things to be passed to drive out the people that they displaced. So the process is to repair and rebuild communities, but it's not repairing and building the communities for the people that lived in it. It's displacing those people and bringing in other people, affluent people. And so it skews the numbers so bad, but you displace these people, give them no place to live because now the cost of living is higher. They can't afford to live in the area anymore. And now you want to fine them. So the fine for going against the panhandler ordinance is $25 for the first offense if you're caught lying or sitting, and then $50 for every offense after that. Oh man, I have to like take a deep breath and calm down because it really hits home, because the people that it's impacting are the people that it's driving out, which is just morally wrong. And they have these different services and groups in place to quote unquote help and offset that. But for as many people as it is, the number continues to grow throughout the years. So that's really having adverse effects on the community that it should be helping. Now, I'm just going to move on. Take a deep breath. I'm moving on to the next example, the next point, which this became a very, very big deal within the past few years, especially over this past summer. So again, if you've ever been to Charleston, visited for any amount of time, you may have come across this or seen it. And it's the selling, making and selling of palmetto roses. On July 2nd, a black teenager was arrested for selling palmetto roses. And it was made this big, huge deal. And as a result, another ordinance was put in place. And it basically made the development of the Palmetto Artisan Program, which is now required for any youth that wishes to sell the palmetto roses. The program is free of charge, and it was originally meant to teach entrepreneurship to the youth, but now it places rules and restrictions on them that basically impacts the money that they will make. So essentially, because of this program, a lot of youth have decided they would rather illegally sell the roses on their own to have a higher profit margin than to go through the program, which limits the amount of profit they make. And a South Carolina legislator, I believe his name is Marvin, I don't know how to say his last name, Marvin P. All right. He basically said that it's a disproportionate impact on black youth, because I've not seen anyone other than black youth making and selling palmetto roses. Not one time in 7 years of me living in Charleston have I seen anyone other than black youth selling and making these. And when you dive a little bit deeper, you think about it, the palmetto roses, sweetgrass basket weaving, those are traditional Gullah crafts. And if you look around Charleston, you will see that our culture is loved. And it's like they love our culture, whoever you want to put they to be. They love our culture, but they don't love us. And I don't get that, because I literally saw a Gullah Geechee shop owned by white people, operated by white people, not one black person in sight. How? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Not that it's wrong, but as long as they're making money off of us, it's okay. But when we try to make money off of what's ours, it's a problem. And this is all stemming from gentrification, because this practice of the palmetto rose has been around for centuries. Like, this is not a new occurrence, but because there's a different demographic of people in the area, it's now a problem. And that's a problem within and of itself. So it's just like, oh my goodness, come on, people. Are we serious right now? These are teenagers, children. And now you're making them subjected to the law, to encountering the police because you want to call the police on them. Now you're making them subjective to the criminal justice system, which is not meant for them. It's not for black people. So it brings about all these other problems and issues that we now have to deal with as a result. And I'm not talking what someone heard me. I'm backing what I have with facts, with information, but it's what I witnessed with my own two eyes. It's hurtful. It really is hurtful because now we have teenagers who are doing something positive, and now what they're being told that it's wrong, that it's bad. Do it this way, make less money. But if you do it your own way and don't go through this program, you're now illegal, even though it makes you more money. So it plants a bad seed, because what if a child gets frustrated and they say, forget these roses, I'm going to be very illegal and do something way worse. So it's just one of those things that it's heartfelt, especially when you know people that are doing it for the right reasons. Some of these people are trying to earn money to put food on their table. It's not that they're trying to earn money to buy the latest and greatest. A lot of them are trying to earn money to get the bare necessities in life. It's not even a luxury or pocket money or anything like that. It's literally to live, to make it from day to day. So I think that's what's more heartbreaking about it, on top of everything else. These next two examples definitely hit home, and these are things that people may not really consider when thinking gentrification. A lot of times, not only are people driven out of their homes, but out of their businesses that they own or businesses that they work for. And one of the perfect examples that I have, my husband is from not just Charleston, South Carolina, but the islands of Charleston, which are like Seabrook Island, Kiowa, Johns Island, James Island, Wattamala Island. And he is from Wattamala Island. And in that area, there was a Piggly Wiggly. Well, Piggly Wiggly was bought out by Harris Teeter. Now, most people from the South Carolina, anyways, know Piggly Wiggly. And Piggly Wiggly is a cost-effective and efficient grocery store. Now, Piggly Wiggly had been in this area for years and years and years and years. And so what happened, not only when Harris Teeter came, did it change the price of goods and groceries, but the people that were there, their time from Piggly Wiggly did not transfer over to Harris Teeter. So if you had 20 plus years, 10 years, or however many years at Piggly Wiggly, and you decided to stay with Harris Teeter, that time did not transfer. So now your time is gone, and who knows what the pay was like. It could have been the same. It could have been less, but you have to make a decision. And people who could have retired, potentially retired from a place, now have no time and grade. And that is just wrong, wrong, wrong on so many levels. And I do know people that were impacted by that. So it's like, man, what do you do? Do you stay? Do you go? What do you do? You know, and Harris Teeter is not cheap. Okay, it's not cheap. So that's one example. And then the last one I have, being displaced from your home, that can happen a lot of different ways. And from what I've been taught about Wattamala Island, Wattamala Island, way back when, was considered inhabitable territory, and Wamala was the place they chose to drop black people off when they could no longer use them. And understand that I'm making reference to a time when black people were enslaved in Charleston. And you have to understand Charleston's history and background to get where I'm coming from on that. But us being the people we are, we made something out of nothing and we built up the area and made it habitable. And we lived on it. And so over the years and down the line, we have land that is quote unquote in our family or in our families and left from generation to generation, but we don't have the proper paperwork on it. And so it's easy for an outside force to come in and don't let them have a little bit of pocket change. And it's easy for them to come in, work and finesse the system to get the paperwork and then pay a chump change for something that's been in families for generations. And now they take the land and claim it as their own. And so people are displaced in those ways as well. And so it's like to really go back and get the paperwork, the deeds and stuff for the land, it takes one, a lot of time. And two, it takes money. And you have to do a lot of legwork. And see, people back in the day believed in having children on top of children on top of children. So just having so many children. So you may need 50 signatures before you can even pursue trying to get the deed or whatever in your name. And it is a process. But these are the ways that gentrification hurt. And just really hurt all the way around, from a place to live, from living in an area, cost of living, and how you're treated, the laws and things that are put out there. So it definitely hurts, but I don't like just bringing issues to the forefront. What are the solutions? I know that black people need to keep the heritage and culture alive, and we need to be more involved in the gentrification process, but the probability of that actually happening, very slim to none. So what can we do? We need to preserve our culture, traditions, land, businesses, homes, the same way that other races and ethnicities do it. And whatever that means, whatever that calls for, we really need to do that. Because at the end of the day, it hurts us. We're being driven out of a place where we know as home. And we're being impacted by it. So the solution is really for us to preserve and push and fight for what is rightfully ours. And that's really all the energy an effort I can exert to this topic at this moment without getting emotional and completely outraged. But if you want more information on this, there are many activists in the area. Charleston Activist Network is really huge on social media, and there are so many projects and things underway where you can help and give back. I myself, honestly, are not a part of any of those things as of yet, but I am doing research and seeing which group best fits me and how I can help give back with my knowledge, my skill set, and abilities that I have. So the only way we can make the change is being involved, raising awareness. So that's what I'm hoping this episode did, in shining some light on gentrification. That is my time, party people. Please follow on Instagram at darkcloud.podcast, on Facebook at darkcloudpodcast, on Twitter at _DC podcast, and on Snapchat at DC podcast. Until next time, in the meantime, in between time, peace and blessings.